This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast, and we're taping on Thursday, December 23rd, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio at his mom's house down in Maryland, Taylor, that's where you are?
Correct. Crofton, Maryland, C-72, once rated the 72nd nicest place to live in all of America. Don't think I've ever forgotten it. That was in like 2006. So
that would be Taylor Schwenk, Vermont being the number one place to grow up. I'm Buster Olin, working from my home in New York. Happy holidays, everyone. We close in New Year's Eve annually, of course, at this time of year. And for me, that always raises distinct memories from the time of the death of Roberto Clemente. December 31st, 1972. He was on a flight meant to bring supplies from San Juan, Puerto Rico to Nicaragua, which had suffered a devastating earthquake and overloaded the plane, went into the sea. I was 8 years old at the time. I remember first hearing about it on the radio and then seeing the banner headlines the next day. And so I wanted to do a podcast today about Roberto Clemente, about his life, about his death, his legacy. And we're going to hear three different voices. David Marinus, the award-winning author who wrote the best biography of Clemente. Longtime big league player and coach Joey Cora, who's from Puerto Rico and was 7 years old when Clemente died. And longtime pirate and friend Steve Blass, who was Clemente's teammate for the better part of a decade. He has many memories of someone who he watched with awe. Before we get to all that, some news and notes at a time when there's not a lot going on, let's face it. Buck Showalter was hired last weekend and introduced as the Mets manager the other day. Here's some of what Buck had to say on the Zoom call he had with the reporters.
It's going to be a priority, you know, from day one to put a product out there that everybody can be proud of. You know, there's going to be people when we're on the West Coast staying up to 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning to see how the Mets did or do. And, you know, I just want everybody to embrace that responsibility. And, Steve continues to eliminate excuses that we might have for things we can't do. You know, the Mets are going to be something that's very precious to the people that we bring in. And it's a great responsibility that I and we will take very seriously every day.
And Taylor, you and I, it felt like we talked about this as soon as we got word that Luis Rojas was not going to return as the Mets manager, that Buck was the perfect hire all along. You as an Orioles fan can relate.
Yes, I think this is a great hire. I mean, he's a steady hand. I mean, there's no better way to put it. Like, I feel like he really, those kind of weird issues that are very Metsian, maybe he's got the magic touch and can iron them out. I think he's as good a choice as any. So good luck, Mets fans.
First Pitch is part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. The Oakland Athletics announced their new manager, Mark Kotze, of course, played for years in the big leagues, and more recently has been the Oakland third base coach. Here's part of what Kotze had to say on his Zoom call with reporters.
I really, really appreciate your words, David, in terms of whether I was going to manage here in Oakland or whether I was going to manage somewhere else. Oakland has always been open to giving me an opportunity to go through those processes, which I truly believe I learned a great deal about myself, a great deal about what it takes to sit in this chair and to be responsible for leadership, which I'm very thankful to the A's.
The Yankees have hired former Oakland third baseman Eric Chavez for their coaching staff. Baseball Tonight is fueled by Gatorade. Gatorade's proven formula. Whatever path you take, greatness starts with G. Really sad news earlier this week from the Detroit Tigers. First base coach Kamara Barti passed away at age 49. They did not disclose the cause of death, saying only that Barti died suddenly. Kamara Barti was someone who came up in the Orioles organization. I met him in the spring of 1995. What a great person. Unbelievably sad to hear that news. Taylor, what else do you have?
Buster, just a couple things to note. Even though the holidays are going on and you might be, I say that to the listener, kicking it for a little bit and not going to the office, but we are still churning out a lot of content over here. Big one, we've got the college football playoffs next weekend. So next week on ESPN's College Football Podcast, we will basically have the whole rotation back in order. Mondays with Kirk, Tuesdays with Pollock and Reese, Wednesdays with Booger and Kevin, and Thursdays with Kevin and Joey Galloway. And they're going to all preview the college football playoff throughout the week. So that should be really good. SV Pod was great last night. Check that out. And as well as Stanford Stephen the Bear, they're giving you all of their college football bowl picks. Check all of those out wherever you're consuming this podcast right now.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Steve Blass pitched 10 years in the big leagues, all of those with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And for 8 seasons, he was a teammate of Roberto Clemente. For years, you heard and saw him on the broadcast of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Steve, how are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good, Buster. I'm retired now after the 2019 season, and I'm getting pretty good at it. Actually, my timing wasn't all that bad when we reflect back.
Yeah, it was funny when I was preparing for that. That's exactly what I thought when I was like, oh, boy, you got to avoid all the COVID questions and the traveling and doing the broadcasts and all that.
It's been quite good, actually. We didn't have a year last year, but I've been able to catch up with my life and my wife and all that stuff. She's got some issues. So it's my turn to look after her after she looked after me for 60 years of the Pirates.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your time doing
absolutely.
This. I mentioned to you, reached out, you know, we're getting close to New Year's Eve, which for me is always brings back memory of being 8 years old and hearing the news about Roberto Clemente. I'm curious, the first time you met him, when was that, and what were your first impressions?
Well, I came from Connecticut and tried out when I was out of high school, but I never met him. So my first time of meeting him and seeing him was in spring training of 1961, my first invitation to spring training at the major league camp. And they were just coming off the world championship. So we were 18-year-old minor leaguers. We hardly dared to talk to those guys. And all we could do is look at them and admire them. So even then, the first couple of years, but I tell this story it's true because it happened a little bit later on when I finally got up to the big leagues and won a couple of games. I had him up on this plateau. You know, we had, all us young Pirates hardly dared to speak to him even then, but I won a few games. So I was in the locker room and finally I dared. I said, okay, I'm going to get this squared away. So I walked over to his locker and said, listen, Roberto, here's the deal. If I ever get traded, I'm going to pitch you inside because every National League pitcher pitches you away and you hit 350. And he said, Blass, I'm going to tell you one thing. You pitch me inside, I will hit the ball to Harrisburg. I said, oh, okay, good talk. And I turned around, went back to my locker. He actually told me that. And, you know, we were on pretty good terms by then. But he was just a fascinating character. And Buster, when you go back to that New Year's Eve, Dave Justy, a teammate and a great Pirate pitcher, we're neighbors and we're having a New Year's Eve party. And he and his wife, Jenny, decided to stay over. And the phone rang at 3:00 in the morning. And it was Bill Guilfoyle, who had formerly worked for the Yankees, but he was our PR director. And he said, there's been an unconfirmed report that a plane went down in Puerto Rico and Clemente was on it. And that was the end of any idea of sleep that night. And I'll never forget it. We went to Joe Brown, our general manager's house, you know, back then we didn't have the 24-hour news loop cycles, and we just were searching for answers, and we couldn't get none. It was early in the morning, New Year's Day morning. Joe didn't have any information. We went to Willie Stargell's house, and it's just, you know, when I look back on all the chaos, and I look back, and I feel like the shoulders of the city of Pittsburgh slumped when we all found out it was true. It was just such a shock, such devastation.
When you do you remember, I know it was almost 50 years ago, but what do you remember about how exactly you found out? You mentioned that there had been the unconfirmed report. When did you actually hear specific news about it?
Probably later on this morning, about 10 or 11 o'clock, we got confirmation. Guilfoyle called back, and you know, we just didn't know how to digest it. And you know, he's just been such an icon around our city, and you know, more so than the baseball world, because we were connected with him every day. And it was just, you know, usually you're getting ready for a new year and looking forward to things and optimistic, and it was just a punch in the gut for our city and all the people in it. So yeah, the morning of July 1st, that's when we got the confirmation.
What in those days after, what do you remember about you and your teammates connecting?
Well, we connected because we were scheduled to go to a memorial in Puerto Rico. So Dave Jussie was the player rep. So we're good friends and neighbors. So we'd go down to the ballpark and try to help with the arrangements, you know, checking in with people, who's going to be there, who's not. And you know, there was officials from Pittsburgh, political people and other folks that were going to go down on a charter. So we were doing that. But as it all unfolded throughout the memorial, I don't know how I got through that. I wound up reading the eulogy that had been paraphrased from Lou Gehrig with the Yankees' permission. But the thing was, you have that devastation on New Year's Eve, and then you go to spring training, and that's, you miss him all over again. It's like you just lost him again, because here we were in spring training in 73 without Clemente. That just didn't seem possible. So you get through that, and then you go to opening day, and once again, it all comes back. So it was almost like a three-stage grieving scenario that was not any easier as it went along. So it was just such a bizarre time.
That spring, I was going to ask you about that. That spring, as you guys got back together, was it almost felt like it was just an extension of that memorial service?
Absolutely, yeah. So now we go through spring training. Now you come home to Pittsburgh, where you know you got a full house at Three River Stadium, and all the acknowledgement and the moments of silence and all that sort of thing. And then you see Manny Sanguin out in right field, which never did work out. But that was a funny look, because Sanguin was such a fixture behind home plate and such a good friend of Clemente. And he wasn't an outfielder, so that didn't obviously work for Bill Verdon, our manager, or Manny. And it was just a different opening day. There was just a pall over what should be the opening that you start the world of baseball again. Well, it just wasn't that.
I remember reading in a biography about Manny Sanguin that as that memorial service was going on, he actually was swimming and looking for the wreckage of the plane and looking for signs of Roberto, correct?
Yes, correct. And that wasn't just one day or 1 hour or one afternoon. He was down there continually, just devastated, because, you know, he was a friend. And of course, he was a great mentor to Manny and all the Latinos that came to our ball club. I mean, what a figure to help you adapt to the major leagues when you get called up, or adapt to Pittsburgh and have him over there in your corner. And he was very attentive to all those guys. I mean, even before the World Series, we played in 71. So attentive to Jackie Hernandez, who, you know, Earl Weaver said, you can't win with Hernandez at short. And so symbolically, he was involved in the last out of the series. But Clemente was that way. So what a scenario for Manny Sanguin and all the Latino guys to be introduced to Pittsburgh and the Pirates and the city.
Describe him as a teammate. What was he like on a day-to-day basis?
I don't want to say the word inspirational, but you were always watching him. I mean, I felt like I was there 8 years with him and parts of others. And you just didn't want to take your eyes off. He was always impeccably dressed. The guy could have been a movie star, even at 38 when the accident happened. A handsome man, always well-dressed. He carried himself with that, you know, from all the books you read and the David Moranis book, he carried him with a presence that you didn't want to be, you wanted to be around. You felt good looking at him. And I wrote in a little book that I wrote that I said, you know, he even had a presence kneeling in the on deck circle, but he was a cut above. You know, we were major league ball players. We had to be good to be there, but he seemed to exist on a higher level, as far as I felt, when I watched him, when I was pitching and watched him in right field, I was delighted. But even when I wasn't pitching, sitting on the bench, you wanted to watch everything he did because he had this style and the way, you know, the basket catch, the way he ran the bases. He didn't fly, didn't have a big stride. He galloped, but he always got there in time. So there were aspects of him. I watched him the way he handled the clubhouse guys. And I got lucky. I'm from a small town in Connecticut. I got lucky to spend 8 years with him.
I always, have told friends who've asked me about players, said, look, they're just like everybody you work with at the office. They have insecurities. They have things that they have to work through. But there have been, in my time covering baseball, some exceptions. For example, I always felt that Derek Jeter knew when he was going to show up to the park. And, you know, I don't mean that literally, that he was going to get three hits, that in a big moment that he was going to come through. Mariano Rivera had that without a doubt, this absolute belief. And as I mentioned, I was 8 years old when Clemente passed away, but that was my sense of him, is that he had this tremendous inner strength.
Yeah. Clemente was like that. Now, I wasn't around in his early years, but by the time I got there, he was the man. You know, you got Willie Stargell there, you got Bill Mazeroski there, but as a teammate, I was also a fan, and I expected him to get something special done each day. And, you know, I felt that way about Stargell too, and in a small way, Maz, and walking in, pitching and being on a team with three future Hall of Famers. But Clemente had that different kind of presence that he carried himself with. And so when he came up to bat, you know, he's got a wide stance. He looks awkward. He hits off his front foot. Looks like his neck is going to come unattached from his head as he gets ready to get in the box. All those things. But they combined to have a package that you didn't want to miss. You didn't want to miss anything about it. So I was expecting him to do well every night. And damned if he didn't. Most nights, as you say, with Jeter and the Mariano Riveras, there are those special people. But then you get into the personalities, and every one of them have their own unique personalities, as did Clemente. So he was just fun to watch.
How would you describe his legacy in baseball?
Well, you start with the fact that he was one of the first great Latino players. His legacy was, something special to the city of Pittsburgh. We were lucky to have him. And a guy that was, to me, Clemente, I'll say that he was one of the most fascinating baseball players I was ever around. And I had the opportunity to watch Mays late in his career and watch Henry Aaron a lot, who I thought, you know, I could talk hours about Aaron too. But Clemente, he had that fascinating. He was exciting. Mays was exciting in his old, but I saw Clemente every day. So his legacy to me is one of the most fascinating baseball players that I watched or was around. And the legacy too. Then you go from that to the fact that he was aware of the world. Here's a part of his life. He was aware of the world around him, not just the world of baseball. He was aware. And he always said, "I relate to the people who struggle." Yeah, and he lived that, and died doing it. So there's that unique chapter of humanitarianism that not everybody has. And he lived that, and his goal was to build a baseball, not an academy, a place where kids could grow, learn, be taught everything, baseball, go to school. He had this dream of Pirate City that started, never really flourished, but I have no doubt that he would have made it flourish. And I tell people, I said, if he lived, I would have been as surprised if he was the governor of Puerto Rico.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Well, how do you feel about the idea that's been talked about within baseball circles about retiring his number?
Buster, I wouldn't have any problem with it. I don't need it. I've got his number and his life that I saw embedded in my mind. So I don't need it. If they do it, I would certainly not argue about it or be disappointed, but I've got everything I need about Clemente from a personal standpoint. So I'm just fine with it the way it is. And, you know, his legacy, it doesn't go away. There were great ball players, you know, the Mays, the Ruth, all that. But I don't know if anybody like Clemente has had, there's books written about him every year. There's celebrations, there's memorials, there's parks named after him, streets, playgrounds. The legacy after all these years doesn't seem to lessen. And that tells you about a guy that did not play in a great media center, like New York, Chicago, L.A. This is the guy that got discovered after the World Series of 71 by the people around baseball. But we've been seeing it for 20 years. So that legacy is ongoing. So when you called and asked me to do this, I never hesitate. I love talking about him because, again, I feel lucky that I spent some time with a guy like Clemente.
David Marinus is an associated editor of the Washington Post and the author of many books, including Clemente, The Passion and Grace of Baseball's Last Hero. David, how you doing?
Just great, Buster. Great to be with you. Hope we have a baseball season.
Thanks for joining us. As I mentioned to you in the message I sent to you, when we get to this time of year, every year, I always think back to, you know, being 8 years old and hearing the news about Clemente. What do you remember about the time you heard about that news from December 31st, 1972?
Buster, I was 23 years old. I was the weekend and night voice of WIBA radio, reading the news at night. And as I recall, it was, it was a holiday, of course, it was New Year's Eve. And so I was working that night. And I remember I was in the small office with a teletype machine, and it started clanging as it does when there's something special coming over. And so I read as the type was punching out about Clemente's death. And he was my favorite player, Buster. I mean, I grew up in Wisconsin. I loved Henry Aaron and the Milwaukee Braves, Warren Spahn, Lou Burdett, Billy Bruton. But there was something about Clemente that just drew me to him. You know, every kid, I think, has someone, whether it's an athlete or a singer or a writer, who just has a special connection for them. And for me, that was Roberto Clemente for a lot of reasons. But in any case, when I saw it, you know, I was overwhelmed with grief. And I turned that grief into action. And I had a 5-minute newscast that night, and I devoted the entire newscast to Roberto Clemente. So I'm sure the listeners, if there were any, were wondering, what the heck is he doing? But that's how much he meant to me.
Well, I don't know if you saved a copy of what you said on air or if what you remember about that, but was it difficult to get through for you?
It was difficult. You know, that was the beginning of my career as a journalist. As a journalist, you learn how to separate briefly your personal feelings from what you're doing at the moment. But yes, as I recall, I played a Puerto Rican song. I had some what they call actuality. I guess you would know that from radio, of Clemente talking. I recalled his 1971 World Series, and then just reported what the AP had at that point about the plane crash, which was not much. And so, you know, it was decades and decades later when I decided to do this book that I really uncovered the tragedy, needless tragedy of that plane crash.
So obviously your fandom was an initial inspiration for you in doing the book. Walk me through your thought process as you decide, okay, I'm definitely doing this.
Well, you know, there are a lot of athletes that I root for, whether they're Green Bay Packers or Milwaukee Brewers, you know, my teams or other players that I like. But, you know, I'm never going to write a book about Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre. I wrote a book about Vince Lombardi because he represented so much more about the mythology of competition and success in American life. And similarly, I thought Roberto Clemente was a chance to write about the sport that I love and about a human being that I was fascinated by, but also had some larger themes to it about the role of Latino ball players in America, the role of immigrant, you know, migrant workers in a sense. He wasn't an immigrant because Puerto Rico was part of the United States, but he was a migrant worker applying his trade. He had to overcome two prejudices of both race and language. And he was that, what I would call, rare athlete who was growing as a human being as his talents were somewhat diminishing. You know, so many athletes, sadly, once their athletic talents are gone, they struggle with what to do with life. And I could see Clemente learning and growing as he was getting older, becoming a more powerful figure politically as a humanitarian and as a leader of people.
Yeah, when we talked to Steve Blass yesterday, he mentioned that he wouldn't have been surprised if Clemente had wound up being the governor of Puerto Rico. You know, and he spoke to exactly what you mentioned, that you couldn't take your eyes off him. He said, you know, he was a guy that he said, I'm a professional player and I couldn't take my eyes off him. As you were doing your research, what were some of the stories that really tugged at your heart as you related to talk to his former teammates about that night, December 31st?
Well, you know, all of them were completely broken up. I think Blass and Giusti and some guys were at a New Year's Eve party. Manny Sanguian was just totally crushed. He was like Clemente's big brother. Vic Power, had, the great Vic Power, another player I loved in that era, had gone to Nicaragua with Clemente previously when they were running the Puerto Rican team in the Caribbean World Series. He sort of had this haunting feeling that something horrible had gone on. It was an emptiness. Orlando Cepeda described how New Year's Eve in Puerto Rico is usually the most joyous, raucous evening of the year. And he felt this eerie quiet even before he knew what had happened with that plane. Clemente was... you know, he was not a saint, even though he's now sort of regarded as one in the Spanish-speaking world and in Pittsburgh. He was a beautiful, agitated, contradictory, unsettled. You know, he was proud of everything, including himself. But he had these characteristics that were transcended most ball players, and so they were by the time of 1972, he had matured to such an extent that every player on the Pirates and most of the league were in awe of Clemente. And so it was stunning. Here's one of the odd things about it is that he was like, it was impossible to believe that he was dead. The people of Puerto Rico thought that he would come walking out of the sea. They waited along the shoreline for days afterwards, just thinking that Clemente would still be alive. And yet, for his short life, he was always haunted by death and a fear that he would die young, and often had nightmares that he would die in a plane crash.
Can you relate the conversation you had with Manny Sanguian about what he did after the plane crash, swimming and looking for Clemente?
You know, Manny, to Manny, Clemente was everything. He was his big brother, his soulmate. And he went, you know, while the other Pirates were mourning, Manny went into action. He went out in one of the boats and went diving looking for the body day after day. And it was, you know, it was just, he is one of those who couldn't believe that Clemente could really be gone. And so he was, you know, it was both a physical search and an emotional search for something that was, that he couldn't believe was lost. Manny was the sort of, you know, Clemente was, had a hidden sense of humor and joy of life. And with Manny, it was all right out in the open. And so he was a boon to Clemente as well as Clemente was a big brother to him.
You know, I had read in your book about how long the grief lasted among the Pirate players. And then to hear Steve tell that story about going to spring training and then opening day. And then it's just something they relived and relived and relived and continue to add grief. Can you just relate, you know, some of what you learned about that from your conversations with players?
It was just an emptiness that they all described afterwards, you know, of so many ways of, you know, Clemente on the ball field, as, you know, as we talked about earlier, the fact that you couldn't take your eyes off him, the way he kinked his neck when he was walking to the plate, the way he would throw the ball back in the infield underhanded when, you know, when he made a catch, or if someone was on base, that incredible throw from deep right field to third base or home plate. So in all of those ways, it was like, where is he? You know, I mean, it was a ghost, an apparition of Clemente, as well as, you know, his, the way he worked in the clubhouse, giving other players massages, always jabbering at them, teasing them. It was a horrible emptiness. And it lasted not just for those few days, but really for decades. I tell a story in the book. I interviewed Tony Taylor, one of the Cubans, and he said that years afterwards, when he was a coach, he would take his players out to right field whenever they came to Pittsburgh. He'd take the young Latinos out there and say, "This is where the great one played. This is what you, this is, you know, what brought you here, and this is what you have to live up to." You know, he had that. It wasn't just Puerto Ricans. It was all of Spanish-speaking Latin American baseball playing Latin America and much of the rest of the country as well.
Along those lines, how do you feel about the idea of Major League Baseball retiring Clemente's number 21?
You know, I think they should do it. I think that the main reason that it wasn't done during the Bud Selig era is, you know, a sort of a valid but personal reason of Bud's, which I think he would think, well, we have to retire Henry Aarons too then, you know. I think so, but I think that Latinos are so integral to Major League Baseball, and Clemente is the patron saint of all of them. You know, you had Minnie Minoso before him, but it was really Clemente who sort of solidified that image of the, he was the first Latino in the Hall of Fame. He had those extra ingredients that transcend baseball. I would love it if they retired his number. But I have to say, Buster, I also love it when everyone wears his number. You know, there are so many great Latino ballplayers over the years who have chosen 21 for that reason. You know, whether it was Carlos Delgado or Ruben Sierra, so many choose 21 to honor him. So he is honored. I think that the final honoring would be to retire his number.
David, thanks so much for joining us. It's always great to talk with you.
Well, thank you, Buster. I'm always happy to talk about the great one.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you
into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Joey Cora played 11 years in the big leagues and has been a big league coach for most of the years since his time as a player ended. Most recently as a third base coach for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He was born and raised in Caguas, Puerto Rico. Joey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Buster? Everything good?
I'm doing great. So you and I are about the same age. We both enrolled at Vanderbilt at the same time. And you were 7 years old when Clemente passed away. Tell me what you remember about that.
When he passed away, that was it was hard because I remember like vividly we were in away from our grandparents' house back to our house, and then we heard the news in the radio, and you know back then it was that way, and we couldn't believe it in our way, and we all start crying. You know, my dad, which he was a tough guy. He never did that. There was some tears in his eyes, and then mom and myself, we start crying. We couldn't believe what was happening. And then we got home, and then we put up the TV, and there it was. But it was a tough time because Clemente meant so much for us, for the whole Puerto Rican community, and it was a tough time. And right now I'm feeling it because I remember vividly when it happened.
Tell me if you can describe what he meant.
Oh, well, he's for me and for, I would imagine for a lot of people in Puerto Rico, he's the most important Puerto Rican in the history of our island. I mean, he put Puerto Rico on the map for the whole world. And if it wasn't for him, he paved the way for all of us that came after him to play baseball in the big leagues and in professional baseball. But he was so important, not only on the field, but off the field. And he made a difference in the world. And like I said, he put Puerto Rico on the map. And that will never, ever be forgotten by any of us.
So your dad was heavily involved in amateur baseball in Puerto Rico. And this, I'd never asked you about this. Did he ever get a chance to meet Roberto Clemente?
Yeah, he did, because he was a journalist, and he covered the Puerto Rican Baseball League. And when Clemente played there and managed there, he was there to cover him too. So he did meet him a few times, and he talked to him, and I mean, he was interesting. And again, we'll go back to the first question. We find out when that was one of the first, maybe the first time I ever saw my dad, tears in his eyes when the news came on in the radio while he was driving. So, you know, that's how much Clemente meant to him. And, you know, the fact that he talked to him and he interviewed him a few times, it was even more shocking, I guess.
What were some of the stories your dad might have related about him to you?
Well, you know, Clemente was so nice with everybody. You know, he talked to everybody. He talked to every, you know, he did every interview. I don't think he ever turned one down, even though then it was maybe a little bit easier than now, obviously. But you know, not as many newspapers, obviously not social media or nothing like that. But he was cordial to everybody, and he made everybody feel comfortable, even though he was, like I said before, it's the biggest superstar, the most important guy in Puerto Rico. He didn't act like that. He acted like he was just, you know, anybody else. And he made everybody else feel very comfortable with him. And my dad always said that he was so humble, and even though he was a superstar, that he wanted everybody to all of us, to make sure that we try to follow that path.
So I'm sure that you got to know Manny Sanguin, you know, long before you joined the Pirates. But even then, you know, he was someone who always had a presence, has always had a presence with the Pirates. You know, Steve Blass, David Marinus were talking about, you know, Manny being just so devastated, you know, feeling like he had lost his big brother. Have you ever spent any time talking with Manny about that, those days after when he was out swimming around looking for Clemente?
Without a doubt. Especially when I joined the Pirates, on as a third base coach, and even as a minor league manager. I talked to Manny, and because I wanted to know, by you know, from himself, you know, from his mouth, what was that all about? I heard all the stories, and you know, the fact that he went there and scuba diving, trying to find his body, all that stuff, and he told me, he said it right to my face, everything that he went through at that time. And there's another guy that's a tough guy. But when he started talking about Clemente and what happened that day, he started crying, you know, and you can see the pain that he feels every time he needs to talk about, you know, Roberto Clemente. That was his big, you know, his big, big brother, maybe a father figure for Manny. And to this day, he reveres Clemente, and he loves the guy. And he was trying to find him. He always thought he was going to be able to do it. He wanted to be the one that saved Clemente, because in many ways he feels like Clemente saved him. And, you know, while he was playing, and he did a lot of things for Manny that not too many people would have done, and it helped Manny to become a big leaguer, the person that he is. And Manny's a great, great person. But he always credit Clemente to help him out to be the person that he is. So there's a lot of stories that Manny tells you about Clemente on and off the field, and he's very interesting. But, you know, sometimes you try to stop because talking to him, because I know he's very – you can feel the pain in Manny's eyes when he talks about Clemente. But he loves the guy. He loves the guy.
Most of, you know, I'm assuming you probably didn't get a chance to see him play in person in the big leagues. Most of what you and I know at our age is from highlight clips. But you played the game at an incredibly high level. You played with Ken Griffey Jr. You played with Alex Rodriguez. When you watch those clips of Clemente, what's a play that just jumps out at you where you're just like, oh, my God? What are some of those observations you have as someone who's played so much baseball?
The throw from the corner in the World Series, even though they got to third base, even though the guy was safe at third base. But when you see that highlight in the World Series against the Orioles in 71, from the corner there to all the way in the air to third base, you know, maybe a lot of us, like coaches and outfield coaches, would say that you shouldn't be throwing that ball to third, because he was in the corner and he had no shot. But he did have a shot. He was unbelievable. And then obviously the homer to put the Pirates ahead in that World Series in the seventh game. And, you know, the athleticism, you know, that a guy, but remember, in 71, Clemente was, 38 years old, 37 years old. He was playing at a super high level at that time. And he didn't have the help, you know, all the equipment, all the nutritionists, all that kind of stuff, and, you know, the private planes, all that stuff. And he was playing at a super high level in a World Series at that time. He was very productive. So that says a lot about what type of player he was. And, you know, Clemente had all the perks and all that stuff that we have right now, you know, private planes, nutritionists and weightliftings and coaches, all that kind of stuff. Who knows? He would have been playing until he was like maybe 60 years old. You're talking about Tom Brady playing at 44. I mean, look at Clemente, 37 years old, being an MVP in the World Series in 71. That's a unbelievable feat, in my opinion.
So, Joey, you're going to love this story. The base runner on that play going from second to third base was Merv Rettman, who years later was a hitting coach with the San Diego Padres team that I covered. And I had always loved that particular highlight as well. And I asked Merv about that. And, you know, Merv was known as a fast runner when he was a player. And he told me that when he was running from second to third, he could see the body language of third baseman. I think it was Richie Hebner. As he's looking to take the throw, and he couldn't believe that it was in play. And he's like, oh my God, I better pick it up here. Cause he could tell from the third baseman, he might get thrown out. He couldn't believe the ball got there.
Who knows? Maybe we replayed with the good replays that we have now. He might have been out. Who knows? I don't know.
Exactly.
but you know, I don't think nobody can make that throw. Maybe Vlad Guerrero does it. Did it, you know, maybe Raul Mondesi, maybe Ichiro can make those throws, but I don't think they would have taken the chance of making that throw, you know, because obviously, not obviously, I mean, it seems like, you know, it was an easy first to third situation for Murph to run. He shouldn't be throwing that ball, but man, with those arms, they take a shot. And he did, and he was close. He was close, but he was super impressive because, I mean, all the way from in the air and in line, you know, he wasn't like those guys that throw the ball. It's like a puff fly ball, you know, throwing in, you know, 1,000 feet in the air. No, he was in a line, a rope, like that, we say it. And he was super impressive. He was super impressive. And that always has stuck in my mind for since the first time I saw that throw. You know, you don't make those type of throws. You're not supposed to make those type of throws, but he did it. He did it.
Well, anybody who wants to see that throw can look it up on YouTube. If you type in Roberto Clemente in 1971 World Series and throw. Joey, last one for you. You know, it feels like every year we have this conversation about retiring number 21. How do you feel about that?
I think, you know, he's getting closer, Buster, to that. I remember vividly the way that with Jackie Robinson, the way he started with, I was playing with Seattle with Junior. And Junior started that movement to retire number 42. He started, you know, ask for permission to wear number 42. And then people started to fall. All of a sudden, the movement could have been stopped. And I think it's happening right now with 21. I mean, it started when the Pats started to wear number 21 on Clemente Day and letting every Latin guy to wear number 21, and now letting any player that wants to wear number 21 to wear it on Clemente Day. They already got a Clemente Day September 15th for the rest of for eternity to being Clemente Day. So that's how it starts, and it's going to happen eventually. I mean, the guy, in my opinion, he deserved it. He made a difference not only on the field but off the field. He paved the way for all of us to play. I know what Jackie did is unbelievable. That's unmatched. But Clemente did it as well. And he kept their legacy going. And up to this day, everybody remembers Clemente. Even, you know, you talk to any Latin guy right now, and nobody saw him. None of these guys saw him play. And nobody obviously talked to him or nothing. But they all remember Clemente. And they all want to know more and more and more about Clemente. So that's the type of guy that if you're going to retire a number, that's the type of guys that you want to retire a number. The guys that were good on the field, but obviously off the field. And he was, and he deserves it.
Joey, always great to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
All right, Bosker. We'll talk to you later, man. Maybe we see you in New York.
Steve Blass was the winning pitcher in Game 7 of the 1971 World Series, defeating the Orioles 2-1. And after that World Series, Roberto Clemente was voted the MVP. He spoke after the World Series on national television and really caught everybody's attention by asking for his parents' blessing in Spanish. Give a listen.
And here with me right now, the greatest right fielder in the game of baseball, Roberto Clemente. Bobby, congratulations on a great World Series.
Thank you, Bob. And before I say anything in English, I would like to say something for my mother and father in Spanish. En el día más grande de mi vida, para los nenes, la bendición mía y que mis padres me echen mi bendición en Puerto Rico.
Mr. and Mrs. Clemente, we love them too.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for a lovely Thursday, the 23rd. And real quick, on the 25th, Christmas Day, the annual NBA tradition continues with five of the best gifts that anyone could ask for. The star-studded schedule starts at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on ESPN with the Hawks taking on the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. Then over on ABC, the Celtics square off against the Bucks, followed by the Suns hosting the Warriors. Later on ESPN and ABC, the Nets battle the Lakers with the day capped off by the Mavs clashing with the Jazz at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific on ESPN. I will be watching about 85% of that, and I believe that you should as well. Let's head over to the tweets. First up, my guy PK Steinberg writes in, do the players get paid next year if there is a delay to the season or, God forbid, no season? I'm wondering how motivated they are, if their wallets will be hurt, or does it not matter? For example, Scherzer's going to get his $43 million no matter what. That is a question he follows up with. I genuinely don't know how it all works, but it's something I'd love to know. What do you think?
Yeah, PK, no, the players don't get paid unless there's specific language in the contract. For example, in 2020, Dellen Betances had language that he got paid early in the year. So even though he had the pandemic and the 60-game season, he got the bulk of his money. But no, by and large, players are not paid. 99.9% of the players are not paid during this time. And it's a big deal. If you're on the owner's side, that's the leverage potentially you have to, you know, hope that the players make a deal. And on the player's side, you know, the fact that the owners potentially are losing money with the fact that they're not selling tickets now, they might lose games during the regular season. And you'd hope that loss of revenue on both sides compels them both to the table.
Last tweet for the show. David at BaseballFan1918 writes in, hey, Buster, now that Buck is officially the Mets manager next year, how do you think he will put his stamp on filling out the roster with either free agents or trades when the lockout is over?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think that he's going to have a big voice in building the Mets bullpen once the free agency period starts again. And let me tell you something. I mean, that's what Buck is known for. He is excellent at running a bullpen. And the Mets clearly are just going to keep on spending when baseball resumes. And the group that is the largest of unsigned players are relievers. They should do great. And I bet you Buck will be calling Billy Epler every 2 minutes saying, what about this guy? What about that guy? What do you think about getting that guy? I think they could build a great bullpen with Buck having a voice in that conversation.
Great point, Buster. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you're visiting with friends and family over the next couple of days, just they might be baseball fans. They might like to hear these tremendous interviews we had today. So do tell a friend or family member if they enjoy baseball as well.
That's it for today. That's it for this year, right, mm-hmm. Taylor? We're not doing a podcast next week.
Nope, we are taking the week off. I know you're a little bit mad about it, Buster, because you love the grind, but I think this will be good for you, honestly.
Yeah, I think it'll be good too. And it'll be good for everybody to take a break. And we'll all cross our fingers that when the next time we have a podcast in the first week of January, that there'll actually be some progress in the labor talks. My thanks today to Steve Blass, to Joey Cora, David Marinus, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Don't get COVID. Remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.